This week we study 2 Samuel 13:23 to the end of that chapter. This passage describes how Absalom, David's third son, killed Amnon, David's first son. This, of course, occurred in response to Amnon having raped Absalom's sister Tamar at the beginning of the chapter. We discussed that last week. This is the beginning of trouble for David as a result of his adultery with Bathsheba and his murder of Uriah the Hittite. And in studying this, we will consider the moral ambiguity of Absalom's actions and the natural outcomes of social affairs when those in positions of power passively fail to do their duties. The passage for consideration is 2 Samuel 13, 22-39, and if you have not read it yet, I recommend that you pause and read it now. We've entered the story arc of Absalom's rebellion. It started, as we discussed a few weeks ago, with David committing adultery with Bathsheba. Nathan the prophet declared that David would be punished for this. He would face strife from within his own family, and his own wives would be publicly raped in broad daylight. The strife started, as we discussed last week, when David's son, the crown prince Amnon, raped his half-sister Tamar. David should have punished Amnon for this, but he didn't have the heart to do it. As a result, Tamar's brother Absalom hated Amnon, and it is hard to blame him. When those in power refuse to enforce good laws, the guilty prosper at the expense of their victims, and victims will only tolerate that for so long. Absalom's hatred of his brother Amnon simmered for 2 years. Absalom was good at the long con. He hadn't said anything to Amnon after the rape of Tamar, and instead he bided his time, waiting for the moment to strike. 2 years was plenty of time to form a plan, and perhaps long enough that the matter seemed settled and Absalom could avoid suspicion. And then Absalom invited his brothers to a sheep shearing. My supposition is that the sheep shearing was an excuse for celebration. When Absalom's servants sheared the sheep, Absalom would make a great profit. He could then spend the money feasting with his brothers. Initially, when Absalom proposed the idea of bringing his brothers to the shearing, David refused, saying that this would be a burden to Absalom. I would suppose that this is partly because a celebration would be expensive, but also partly because having too many people in attendance could get in the way of the work. Of course, Absalom had to invite all the brothers, because inviting everyone was really just a cover to getting Amnon out of the king's palace and into the field where he could be killed. When David refused to send all of Absalom's brothers, Absalom specifically asked for Amnon. That raised David's suspicions. He asked Absalom why he would want Amnon, of all people, the brother who had raped his sister, to go. What Absalom said to settle that suspicion is unrecorded, but apparently David hesitated about sending Amnon such that Absalom had to do some serious convincing. Eventually, David relented and said that he and his brothers could go. Who all went is not clearly stated, but some number of David's sons went to this sheep shearing. Of course, the sheep shearing was all a ruse. Rather than instructing his servants to shear the sheep, Absalom instructed them to wait until Amnon was drunk and then, on Absalom's command, to kill him. Understandably, the servants were hesitant about this. Killing the crown prince is sure to incur the wrath of the king, but Absalom, obviously a man good at convincing people to do things, told them that they should do it on the grounds that he was the one who had commanded it. Absalom, too, was the son of the king. With Amnon out of the way, he had a better chance of inheriting the throne. These servants, I am sure, wanted to stay on Absalom's good side in case he ever came to power. And also, David had demonstrated that his sons could get away with serious crimes without being punished. He had allowed Amnon to get away with raping Tamar. Why shouldn't Absalom then get away with murder? And thus, by leveraging his persona, Absalom convinced his servants to kill Amnon. He exhorted them further to be men of strength and courage in doing so, and thus they did the deed. The servants killed Amnon, and the other sons of David fled. Misinformed messengers brought news to David that all of his sons had been murdered, such that David and his court tore their clothes as a sign of deep distress and went into a period of mourning. Jonadab told David that only Amnon had been killed. You may remember Jonadab from last week. He was cousin to David's sons. It had been Jonadab's plan, which Amnon had used to rape Tamar. Jonadab apparently had not been present at the sheep shearing, but he had the good sense to understand Absalom's motivations. All the king's sons weren't dead. Absalom had no reason to kill them. Only Amnon was dead. And Amnon was dead because his death had been Absalom's revenge for the rape of Tamar. And Jonadab turned out to be right. The watchmen saw the other sons returning in due time, and when they arrived, David and his sons wept for the death of Amnon. As for Absalom, and probably his servants with him, he fled to Talmai, king of Geshur. Today's passage doesn't note this, but 1 Chronicles 3 records that Talmai was Absalom's maternal grandfather. Unlike his half-brothers, Absalom had royalty on both sides of the family tree. Geshur was an area in Israel's north, east of the Jordan River, in the territory of Manasseh. Per Joshua 13, the Geshurites were Canaanites whom Israel failed to expel. Likely David had taken the daughter of their king as a wife in some sort of peace agreement in which Talmai was some sort of relatively independent subordinate to David. Whatever the exact specifics of their relationship were, Absalom was able to hide in Geshur for 3 years. During that time, David stopped mourning for Amnon and wanted only to see Absalom again. And of course, he would see Absalom again, but when he did, it would be trouble. This event has major implications for the tragic story arc in the life of David. I think we would err if we did not recognize this event as being part of the punishment against David for his sin with Bathsheba and Uriah. We see a parallel here between David's actions in chapter 11 and the results in chapter 13. In chapter 11, David engaged in a sexually immoral act with Bathsheba, and then he murdered Uriah. The result, here in chapter 13, is that his daughter was a victim of a sexual assault, and his son was the victim of a murder. As David did to Uriah's family, so was done to his family. While Nathan did not give any specifics about these events, they are aligned with his word from God in chapter 12. Behold, I will raise up evil against you out of your own house. And of course, we can see a direct link between David's actions and these outcomes. As mentioned last week, David had focused himself on his pleasures rather than focusing himself on training up his sons, and his sons had witnessed his error. David committed sexual sin and Amnon saw it. David killed and Absalom saw it. Having that as their example, why shouldn't they do likewise? But this isn't the end of the matter. In today's story, Absalom broke loose from David's grip and he got a taste for blood. Absalom would remain a loose cannon. In a short few chapters, he would rebel against his father, bringing the rest of Nathan's curse to fruition. In contemplating the application of this passage, I think we should first consider the moral ambiguity surrounding Absalom's actions to understand where he went wrong here. Was Absalom in the wrong to kill Amnon? The answer to that is not necessarily easy to parse. First, we need to ask ourselves whether Amnon deserved to die for his sin. Despite the fact that he was no sympathetic character, I would argue that his actions in raping Tamar did not warrant death. As we discussed last week, the penalty for rape is not death. The penalty for incest, though, is less clear. The penalty in that case is to be cut off, and in the past we have taken that to mean being expelled from society, banished, excommunicated. However, the meaning could be a penalty of death by sword. I have argued in favor of banishment over death because the one is less extreme than the other, and in an ambiguous case I would prefer to err on the side of caution. So I would argue that Amnon did not deserve to die, but we don't have crystal clarity on that. We must next ask, whether or not Absalom had the right to enact the penalty of death. If it is the case that Amnon's crime deserved death, then putting Amnon to death would be justifiable, and if it was justifiable, it is difficult to say that Absalom would not be the one to implement the penalty. After all, Absalom was a close relative of the victim, and the law allowed for private enforcement by an avenger of blood, a family redeemer. In fact, as we have mentioned many times before, there is nothing in the law of Moses which centralizes all enforcement powers behind an executive and eliminates the use of those powers by the people. I see no reason that Absalom should not have been Tamar's redeemer by enforcing this penalty on her behalf. That said, I think Absalom's actions fail in moral muster and that he acted unilaterally. We get the impression here that he did not work through the system, so to speak. He didn't openly bring the case before a qualified judge. He didn't present the evidence, giving Amnon a chance at a fair defense. He didn't secure a conviction and receive a judgment against the guilty party. In this way, Absalom's power was unrestrained, and thus Amnon's rights were violated. Absalom acted of his own accord, not in accordance with the law. He hid his plans in the dark of secrecy rather than bringing them to light. With that being the case, we must determine that Absalom and his servants committed murder. And yet, I must confess, I have a hard time blaming him because I'm not at all convinced that any right path did exist by which Absalom might have followed in order to achieve justice on behalf of his sister, who was very clearly and seriously wronged. Absalom had brought his case to David, and David had failed to act despite recognizing and being angry about Amnon's obvious guilt. The problem here was that the court was not making just decisions, and as a result of outright corruption. David was a sex offender who was unwilling to penalize a fellow sex offender. He was a father sitting in a case against his own son, presenting an obvious conflict of interest. David wasn't going to banish his own son, particularly not the crown prince. This was power in high places, not to be crossed, and such is the nature of corruption. Amnon should have been banished, but since Amnon would not be banished, if Absalom failed to act, Amnon would be king, the exact opposite of banished. It would be scandalous for Absalom to sit quietly and allow that outcome, and yet Absalom had no power to implement the just punishment by expelling Amnon out of society. The only power available to Absalom was the sword, and so the sword he took. Make no mistake, Absalom was not justified in doing this. It was a serious wrong. However, we can understand why he acted, and in some measure I do feel sympathy for him. He was stuck in a very bad place, in which he could either choose to act or choose to sit and suffer a severe injustice. He should have endured the injustice, but he didn't. While Absalom deserves criticism for this, we must first lay criticism at the feet of David for his abrupt failure to rightly judge. David's son Solomon, who witnessed these very events, would later describe situations like this one in Ecclesiastes 8:11, writing, "Because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily, the heart of the children of man is fully set to do evil." I think there are two implications there. The first is that when justice is slow, evildoers don't fear reprisal, and so they set out to do evil. But also, when justice is slow, good men are so desperate to have justice that they will enact it themselves in evil ways. Human society simply cannot tolerate severe and widespread injustices for long periods of time, whether the injustices be acts committed or, as in this case, acts omitted. When rulers are negligent, society will self-correct the problem through vigilante justice. This is not a justification of vigilantism, so much as it is an acknowledgement that vigilantism is a natural result of the negligence of leadership, and it is a call then for leaders to diligently enact justice. In today's passage, though, that didn't happen. David erred by committing adultery with Bathsheba. He compounded that error by having Uriah killed. And that set the stage for big trouble with David's sons. And when that trouble began to play out, David compounded his error further by failing to do justice and to correct the problem. He would have done better to banish Amnon than to get the situation that he got. Instead of having his one son banished, he ended up with that son dead and another son living in hiding. And this would set a stage for worse things to come. To conclude, then, the second half of 2 Samuel 13 tells the story of how Absalom killed Amnon. Absalom killed Amnon because Amnon had raped Tamar and because David had failed to make any intervention. Absalom's actions were somewhat morally ambiguous, ultimately not justifiable, but understandable. Herein we find a call for leaders to enact justice, lest the people break out against them. Absalom fled to stay with his grandfather, Talmai of Geshur, leaving David wishing that he would come home. In coming chapters, Absalom would return, but he'll bring David more than he bargained for.
For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.